coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It's the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. HagmanReportLive.com. That's where you'll find all of our video and audio assets and files. And HagmanReport.com for information you need to know. Now, we've been spending a lot of time talking about the coronavirus, haven't we? I think by now, I was talking with a couple of people outside of a couple of what people might say, normal people, people who have, who don't pay attention to much, think the Super Bowl is like a holiday, a national holiday, and really have no idea when you say Iowa caucus, they kind of crack a impish smile thinking you're making a reference to something sexual. And, I asked, and this individual, male, between 50 and 64 years of age, white, suburban dweller, business owner, and just giving you the stats. And I said, so what do you think of this coronavirus? Boy, they're sure, the media is sure hyping this up, aren't they? Okay, that's one way to look at it, I suppose. And it depends. It depends on I don't know. To me, it depends on the day, the hour, the area, the person, the personality. There's a lot of misinformation, I believe, that's been out there about the virus itself, and there's a lot of hype in certain areas and downplay in certain other areas. I don't know, but I've been really drilling down in trying to really understand all of the aspects, and that includes Dr. Paul Cottrell. I'm not sure how you pronounce that last name, but watching all of his videos, the evolution of his research, from day one forward, as he asked, that we do, and he cited two alternative sources. Not exactly in a flattering manner, but not exactly in a, pejorative manner. And that was, Dave Hodges and, Alex Jones. Okay. And both of them have done research and such. I respect both of their research. I'm not going to take them to task. We might have different opinions, before it's all said and done by the end of the day. I don't know. I do know what my research is telling me, and this is independent of the primary alternative sources. Looking at this at the most basic level as possible, I believe that this virus has been tweaked and has been, when I say the word manufactured, people think a little differently. All right. People might have a little differing, opinion, of what that means. But I think it means just that. I think that somebody actually had a hand in, creating this virus. And you may say, well, gee whiz, that really says something, doesn't it? Well, if you tune into this channel to get definites in terms of, this virus is definitely a man-made bioweapon. Okay. That's a little bit different than saying this is a weaponized vaccine. That's a little bit different than saying that this has been tweaked for, weaponization after it was already developed. I mean, there are a lot of differences, and you need to address this. I believe that we need to address this collectively and individually with a very specific level of language to be very clear. So, but I think, look, my concern level is still, at a five, because even if, let's just say even if This is absolutely zero, nothing, nada. It just goes away. You know, it still has done a few things. It has impacted the economic segment. It has, it almost served as a test run. Did you feel this way? It served, almost served as a test run for future potential pandemics. It served as a kind of a, drill. That's probably not the right word. Drill has the connotation of a more focused and a more specific, smaller time frame and such. But you get the idea, I think, from that. So all I'm saying is this. We need to keep researching. We need to keep drilling on this, drilling down on this, and getting to the truth. Because one thing I believe that the deep state, if that's what you, if that's your preference of if deep state is your preference, or permanent state, authoritarian state, the people who want to be in charge, those people who are the authors and facilitators of the authors of things like Agenda 2030 and all of these specific population control agendas, I think it's their objective, in my view, of course, is population control. And to me, this fits right in with that. A listener, and thank you, sent an email, and I'm not sure if I can pull it up here or not. Let me just try. This was, I believe, yesterday. I think it was during when I was on the air last night. Let me see here. Let me give this a try. Bear with me for a second. Directing me to Chuck Missler. And let me see where we're at here. Okay. Chuck Missler. Hold on. I'll get it. I had it up earlier in my office, and I thought it would just come right over here. Sorry, talk amongst yourselves. Dead air is good for the satellites. I hear about that on occasion. All right. Well, at any rate, I can't find it. I'm not going to keep you holding, but there were, I got an email, and I think it was from Deborah. Thank you. Who said, look, this is, Chuck Missler had wrote about the HIV structure, the AIDS HIV, virus, or had spoken about it. And since this has the framework tweaked into it, that I should watch this segment, this session of Chuck Missler. And I agree with you on this, to the emailer, which I can't find. Oh, maybe after the bottom of the hour break I can find it. But anyway, so that's that. All right. The bottom line here is I'm going to keep my eye on all of this. And keep, I'm going to just keep researching and keep speaking with the people who know what's going on. You know, it's one thing again to speak with people, who talk about this, but don't have any definitive contacts or sources in terms of microbiologists or virologists or infectious disease specialists. But I prefer to talk with the actual doctors, the medical doctors who specialize in infectious diseases. I found that to be, at least in my view, the most the most informative. Sometimes it's over my head, but when I ask for the bottom line, they certainly provide it for me. All right. Now, last night, and by the way, as we speak here, State of the Union address. I'm not going to take the chance of running any portion of that live through this broadcast because, people get angry when we do that. When I say people, I'm talking about, you know, whether it's C-SPAN or whatever network that's carrying it. Even the feed, it appears from the venue grounds. It's, you know, so I would urge everyone after this program to really look at the State of the Union, watch it, or at least watch some of the highlights. Now, tomorrow, I think what I'll do is I'll kind of focus in a couple of the highlights. I got a high point or a summary of the State of the Union address earlier. You know, I suspect that this is going to be a very interesting State of the Union when it's all said and done. All right. So just keep your eyes on that. All right. Let me move over to the Iowa polls, because let me tell you something. This is a mess. This is a white hot mess. If you happen to wake up this morning and see Drudge, you can see that Trump pops the 49% approval rating, beating Obama, of course. But what happened in Iowa? What was the deal with Iowa? Some people say, well, it was a software issue. It just happened. You know, who could have anticipated this? Eric the Tech, how are you today, by the way? Did you have a nice day and everything? Yeah. You know, Eric the Tech's one of the hardest working guys I know. I think I broke my computer. My office, I'm not sure I broke it. What did I do to it? It sounded like a jet plane ready to take off. Yeah. Okay. Well, Eric, I sent you prior to showtime. I sent you three links to images. Let's start here, talking about the Iowa caucus, because I really think that the deep state leftists, the deep state communists, the people who are trying to take over our country, they're not trying to hide this anymore. And I think that perhaps Exhibit A for this is the Iowa caucus. Now, let me give you some background before I ask these pictures to be put up. When you look at the Iowa caucus and the lack of decision because, well, the software just didn't work and we don't know who the winner is. And, oh, my goodness. You know what I say? Mission accomplished. I don't think it's seriously. You'd have to be naive to believe that this was not an intentional messing around with the results of the Iowa caucus. And you may say, well, who would benefit? Or, you know, who would do that? Well, who would benefit? Oh, you're going to be surprised. Well, maybe you won't be surprised when I show you what I'm about to show you. When you look at the Democratic National Committee, when you look at the DNC, what do you see? You see a clown car, don't you? A circus of it's a mess. Well, now, earlier today, Conservative Treehouse came out. It might have been late last night, but I think I did see it early this morning. They came out, Sundance wrote about this, and I agree more. I agree 98% with what he writes on the political level than I don't or than not. In the Conservative House, in Sundance wrote, "Mission accomplished. Chaos in Iowa caucuses helps and hurts all of the right candidates." All right, let's take a look at this. He writes, "From the DNC club's perspective, there were three strategic needs surrounding the Iowa caucuses. Now, each one of these is individual. You got to look at them individually, but think about who benefits from this. And why is this important? Because some will say politics. Well, this is all theater. This is all bread and circuses. You might as well be talking about the Super Bowl. Well, how do you relate to the average person or the normal person, average person, Mr. Suburbia, the guy I was talking to earlier today? How do you relate to them? Conversationally, you've got to find a common language, right? This is the common language. All right. So three strategic needs include, number one, hide the collapse of Joe Biden. By the way, did you see that? Eric the Tech, did you happen to see that kiss he gave his granddaughter? Okay, now, help me. Rhonda, help me. I'm serious. Would you give any relative aside from your wife, and be careful, that's my daughter, but would you give any Would you give your granddaughter, if you had one, or your daughter, a kiss like that? Thank you. And if you, you know what, folks, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can find it online. Look, I'm not going to put it up because it just makes me, I throw up my mouth a little bit. Hey, if that's the way they do it in the Biden family, I don't know. And it's not the first time either, you know. And of course, you see all the pictures of them handsy and stuff. Okay. I, yeah. But come on, man. As in the words of Joe Biden, come on, man. All right. So the first success of the Iowa caucus by being tanked. Hide the collapse of Joe Biden. I'm going through puberty there, right? Did you hear my voice? Hide the collapse. All right. Number two, diminish the win by Bernie Sanders. Just put that aside for a second. And three, cover up a less enthusiastic voter turnout. Now, the third part, oh, man, I don't know if you saw, I think it was Savannah Guthrie there. Turnout is a little bit lower than expected, and there's like nobody behind her. She was sitting in this cavernous room. All right. Okay. Yeah, there were like, you know, 15 people. All right. But hold on. Diminish the win by Bernie Sanders. Now, admittedly, Bernie Sanders, folks, is, despite his socialist, communist, really, communist beliefs and biases, and man, he gets in. I'll tell you something. If we have a Sanders presidency, and don't say, oh, we'll never have a Sanders. Oh, we'll never have one. I believe you, but not for the reason I think you're talking about. I believe you because the Clinton people don't want a Sanders. Okay. But if we had one, you might as well just bend over and kiss your, you know, butt goodbye. Unless you're planning on scrapping. So let's focus on diminish the win by Bernie Sanders. Now let's focus on each one. If everything just seemed to collapse, go wrong, and become a mess, and if the end of the night outcomes could be delayed and undetermined, well, in that scenario, the objective would be considered mission accomplished on all of those three points. And what happened? That happened. The media said that Biden was leading the field for the past six months. First of all, polls lie. Now, Peter Barryczewka, hang in there. Just don't throw anything at me now. Hang in there. But polls lie, and polls are skewed to deliver a message that the media wants you to hear and the people behind the media want you to hear. But it's very likely when you suss all this out from Iowa, Joe Biden probably came in number four, number five, whatever. Maybe he didn't even gain any delegates in Iowa. But no one right now is paying attention to that. And there will be precious few who will ask the question or question how the media polling could have gotten it so wrong. And to go back to Sundance, they lie. They lie. Get used to it. It's fake news. Man, I'll tell you something. I should, folks, what do you think? I should go back to 2013 and especially the end of 2015. When I said, look, fake news, this is going to be a thing, a huge thing. I was right. And for those of you who are purists out there, I contend that Barack Hussein Obama, Barry Satoro, that's right, the guy without the proper identity and identification papers, I believe he was the author of that fake news meme, that fake news phrase. But I digress. concurrent with last evening, Bernie Sanders, he didn't stand on stage. He didn't declare victory. He didn't reap any praise that he should have gotten in 2016. Not that I want him to get any, but if you're going to run a contest of, you know, enemy number one and then enemy number two, politically speaking, and if you're going to praise, or, you know, he lavished praise or clap for the person who won, it would be Bernie Sanders, both in 2016 and most likely in 2020. But that aside, he didn't stand on stage and declare victory last night. I'm talking about the Iowa caucus for those running late. Well, the lack of results, what does that mean? It means no clear victory for anyone, no momentum to take from the Iowa caucus, which is a usual thing to forward. And in the future, I'm sure when all the dust settles, it's going to be determined that Sanders won the Iowa caucus. You know, it's interesting too, when you look at the turnout, the media has been saying, oh my gosh, you just wait because we are going to the turnout is going to be so big. Well, not so much. No. In fact, you know what, Eric the Tech, could you, and he's my son-in-law for those just joining. It's my understanding we picked up a station on Monday. I want to, until I verify, I'm not going to give out the call letters, but thank you for running this program. Can you pull up Conservative Treehouse? The headline on this would be Mission Accomplished, Chaos in Iowa. That way I don't have to link it in the program description box. And if you scroll down to that Twitter, there's a Twitter feed there, or Twitter, what would you call it? The thing they put in the article from Francis Brennan. Writes Francis Brennan, in terms of turnout was not quite as high as they expected here. Katie Tour, that's who it was, not Savannah Guthrie. Katie Tour reporting from a Democratic caucus in Des Moines. Now, I understand there's multiple venues, so, but collectively the turnout was bad. Can you play that? Because I think this is pretty telling in terms of video turnout. All right. Now I got to give him a second because I don't want his computer, which is the big, you know, big high dollar computer, to catch fire like mine did and sound like a jet plane ready to take off from my desk. But just go ahead and play it when you're ready. Okay. There we go.
Last thought, guys, in terms of turnout, in 2016, they had around 767 people here. They were prepared for twice that many number, over 1,000, they thought, at least at this precinct. They had 849, so turnout was not quite as high as they expected here. And I'm not sure if that says what that says about maybe the evening, maybe people were busy, or maybe there were so many candidates they needed someone else to choose for them. But keep that in mind. Turnout was not as high as expected, although it did exceed expectations, at least in this one precinct.
Katie Tur for us in Des Moines.
Okay. First of all, does it look like an 850 number of people back there? Look, I don't believe it does. And of course, number one, you're looking at maybe a time when it was either before or after the actual caucus, and you've got people coming in and out. So you can't really judge on the optics there, but bad optics nonetheless, in my view. But what I'm saying here is 850. Come on. Come on, not even close. So it's already hyped up by the media, and I believe that because the left, the Democratic Party, is in shambles, thank you, Donald Trump, it ain't happening. It ain't happening. All right, but here is the nugget. I believe here is, if this were a crime scene, if the Iowa caucus were a crime scene, and you and I were investigators, and we're out looking for that smoking gun, that piece of evidence, that important piece of that thing that you could take to the DA and say, look, man, look, this is it. Look at this. This tells the story. This is where it comes in. This is where it comes in. And I'm going to tell you about that right after the bottom of the hour break. Before I get to the bottom of the hour break, I want to thank the people at Lightstream. I really do. Folks, if you haven't heard about Lightstream, I urge that you do. I want to thank you guys. Lightstream is an incredible, helpful company. I ask you, how much money are you paying in interest on your credit cards every month? Is it too much? Then why not consolidate your credit cards into just one payment at a lower fixed rate and start saving money? Here's what you need to do. And I want to thank Lightstream again for working this out. What a tremendous deal they've made with the Hagman Report. It is easy. Saving money with Lightstream is easy with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. Rates are as low as 5.95% APR with autopay, much lower than the national average rate on credit cards. You look at some of the cards, they're over 20%. Get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 with no fees, absolutely no fees. You can even get your money as soon as the same day you apply. I've gotten numerous customer testimonials to read. I could tell you how this has helped some of my family members. Listen to this one. I applied for this loan after hearing an ad on the radio. Ever the skeptic, I decided to check it out anyway. I was amazed how easy the process was and how the money in my, and had the money in my bank account within 2 days. I would recommend this company to everyone. Again, I decided to check it out anyway, even because I was a skeptic. I was amazed how easy the process was and had the money in my bank account within 2 days. I'd recommend this company to everyone. Now, here's what Lightstream has done for us. Just for my listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. You can't ask for anything better than that. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagman. This is so important. I'm going to spell it out for you, literally, LIGHTSTREAM. That's lightstream.com/Hagman, HAGMANN. Subject to credit approval. Rate includes 0.50% autopay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. And please do that. And thank you to the fine folks at Lightstream. All right. Folks, there are some very, in my view, very talented investigators out there, citizen journalists, researchers, who pointed this out. It's in the article at that Conservative Treehouse. But when you see this graphically, which I'm going to show you next, oh, this will all be tied up in a nice little bow for you. You're listening to the Hagman Report. Just stay right there. Stay right there. Going to be right back.
Reporting on what the mainstream media won't, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Hey, welcome to Hagman. It's the Hagman Report. This was the second segment on Tuesday, February 4th, 2020. I was citing from an article from the Conservative Treehouse right before the break, and I want to tell you that I think that this article really says a lot, and I think that the Iowa caucus, the turnout there, the mission accomplished aspect of the Iowa caucus, I believe, is important for people to understand. By the way, again, before I continue, coffee cups, coffee mugs, HagmanStore.com. HagmanStore.com. I need the bean. I need the bean. That's a favorite phrase of mine. I need the bean. And of course, we have coffee and K-Cups. Sorry about that. A little ammo boxes. Thanks, Kevin. A little ammo boxes there of K-Cups. And three different blends. You got the Detective's Choice, the Revolution, and the Patriot. My favorite is the Detective's Choice. That it's infused with a little more. It's hyper-caffeinated. And it's what I need. I need hyper-caffeination. So, and despite its dark roast, it's very rich and it's gourmet style and it doesn't leave an acidic aftertaste. It has an aftertaste of just a slight little bit of cocoa and cherry blossoms. And of course, the Revolution and Patriot blends lower in terms of darkness. One's a little dark and then, the step down of darkness and the step down below that. So you can see I've got the script down pat, right? But just go to HagmanStore.com, HagmanStore.com, and two N's on Hagman, by the way. Or just go to HagmanReport.com, click on the link to Hagman Store. There you go. And, folks, it's have at it. Give it a try. Tell me how you like it. All right. But before the break, I was talking about the Iowa caucus. And one thing where Sundance did not want to go, I want to go. Here's the deal. Now, Eric the Tech, this is I sent you three different links. The app or the software that was used for reporting of the Iowa caucuses came from a specific tech company. This would be, I believe this would be link number one. And this tech company, interestingly enough, what's it called? It's called... maybe it'll come up. Maybe it won't. Shadow Inc. Thanks. Yeah, it's not coming up here on my computer. And take a look at this image. And whenever you're ready, sir. If it does come up for you on that. There it is. Now, I can't read that from my prompter here or my computer. So just take a look at that. This shadow tech company was behind the software. Guess what? Guess who it's connected to? That's right, the Clinton DNC apparatus, which also just happens to have a connection to Mayor Pete Buttigieg. That's right, Buttigieg. Who happened to somewhat declare victory last night? Now, contrary to what Sundance says, and again, I respect his research. I believe it's second to none, but I want to go here. I want to go here in a big way. There's Pete Buttigieg declaring victory in Iowa and Democratic, amid Democratic vote fiasco, despite being there being no official results. Trust me, I won is the caption on that. Now, there are a couple of other images from Twitter memes and Twitter messages. I don't know if you can put that third link up there. The third link has got four specific graphics in it. It's a little rough. Okay. Is that the one? Is that the one with four? Let's see. No, it's not. Okay, in the article from Conservative Treehouse, that last link, in right below Sad Trombone, there's three links in that paragraph. It would be the third sentence, the last link in the third sentence of that paragraph. I don't know. Can you see it? Did I explain it to you well? Okay. That's it? All right. How about the one before it? Is there four pictures in the one before it? I know I saw it. No, it's all right. All right, don't worry about it. Anyway, I guess here's the idea. I believe, based on the research that was provided in this in this article or the links to research that other people have done, there's a Clinton component. And where there's a Clinton component, you're going to find a propellant by George Soros. And people, look, whether it's George Soros or his sons or the iterations of the firms that are associated with Soros. What happened to that? Yeah, okay. But there was something, I thought there was something in that. Okay. Folks, you can look on your screen. If you're listening to this on the radio, you can go to HagmanReportLive.com. But Tara McGowan, I'm so excited to announce at another acronym has acquired Groundbase, the best CRM and SMS tool on the political market, along with their incredible team led by whatever that link is there. I can't really read that. Are launching Shadow, a new tech company to build smarter infrastructure for campaigns. Folks, if you are not married to or don't want to get even into the so-called scandalous conspiratorial tones, even if you're taking this, oh, well, it just was a terrific accident. Think about this. The software rolled out for the Iowa caucus used by the Democrats and the DNC, brought to you by the same people who want to fix your health care, want to fix your laws, you see how insane this is? They can't even get this right. Although I stipulate it was sabotaged deliberately. But even if that be the case, if I was acting true, you know, with true intent, I would make sure I would stress test the living daylights out of the software, and I would make sure that none of this could happen. So either way you look at it, from a conspiracy full tilt conspiracy angle, which I believe this to be the case, that this was done intentionally to drive chaos and to have no clear winner, because who does this benefit? Yes, it benefits Buttigieg and Hillary Clinton, the Clinton apparatus. Well, why would that matter? Well, it cuts Sanders off at the knees and Biden off at the knees. There's something going on here with this party, because they know that none of these candidates can possibly win against President Donald John Trump. Check out the replies, the response to the comments too, in this article. A lot of very, very good people. Like you, they're very interesting or very intelligent. The one comment in particular, and I did want to hit a couple of these before moving on. The commenter focused on Nate Silver at 538, who wrote this: by giving the winning candidate a boost, the presence of Iowa also reduced the chance of an unstructured race and a political or a potential brokered convention. Okay. The chance of there being no delegate majority was 17% without Iowa, but would have been 20% with it. Okay. All right. Granted, none of those changes, say 24 versus 31%, are necessarily that big, but it's partly because as of Monday afternoon, yesterday afternoon, four or five candidates appear to have a shot at winning Iowa. So for the candidate who actually won Iowa, it would have been a much bigger deal. And this has continued. We estimate that Sanders' chances of a majority would have shot up from 31% to 58% with an Iowa win. Warren's chances shooting up from 5% to 32%, and Buttigieg from 4 to 22%. And that's NateSilver538.com. American Thinker, by the way, This is a very good article about this. And again, you might say, well, why are you focusing so much on this bread and circus? Well, because this, everything, every time you look at this, at least in my view, one of the most important times of our lives is right now. And whether or not we're going to have to actually fight, and I mean fight, come November, is how this all plays out. Is dependent, contingent on how this all plays out. All right. Monica Showalter from American Thinker, in an article published today, "You absolute monster. Lefties descend into primal scream against DNC chief Tom Perez after Iowa fiasco." By the way, I don't care for Tom Perez. I know you don't either, but. Or most of you anyway listening. But the Iowa caucus, as she writes, has more than one loser. And maybe the biggest one is the Democratic Party. And look, if you look at this from an external perspective minus a conspiracy tone, I agree with that. The high trending Twitter tag right now is Tom Perez resign. Hashtag Tom Perez resign. All right. And this, according to Newsweek, as the Iowa caucuses descend into chaos Monday, Perez faced scrutiny over the DNC's announcement that it would no longer require 2020 presidential candidates to meet any donor requirements in order to participate in the debates. Huh. Anyway, read this. I would say read this. Monica Showalter at American Thinker, only because you can see what's happening within the Democratic Party. You can see that this is just absolutely chaos. And people are holding Tom Perez, which Tom Perez, I believe, is perhaps one of the, in my view, is one of the most, he's right up there with Castro. And I'm not talking about America's Castro. I'm talking about Fidel Castro, in my view, in my opinion. All right, so that's that. And again, it's huge. It's big news. I when you look at this mess that this has caused, follow it to who? Follow directly to the Clintons, the Clinton campaign, or the Clinton machinery. All right, a couple other things here. By the way, doesn't this feel a little bit like the server issue at the DNC? Because one of the things, and I'm kind of coming at this a little bit scattered-like, but according to the Washington Examiner, the head of DHS claims that Iowa Democrats refused to let their department test the app that was used in the Iowa caucus. This was an article by Madison Dibby today, stating that the Democratic Party in Iowa declined an offer from the Department of Homeland Security to vet the app that failed during the state caucuses on Monday night. The results from the Iowa caucuses still unknown. After the app used by Democrats to report election results failed, the party acknowledged that, quote, inconsistencies in reporting meant that the results would be significantly delayed. So today, I don't know how many people saw this. If you did, there was on Fox and Friends, Acting Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf said that the Iowa Democrats said, no. They refused when the Department of Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency offered to test the app to ensure its security and also stress test it. But the security aspect is part of that as well. He said this too. I would say that we don't have any malicious cyber activity going on. There's nothing, no one hacked into this application. And that's important because of all the cries of potential cyber hacking that you're going to hear about. From Russia, Ukraine, that kind of stuff. All right. So it was, to me, this was an intentional, I believe this was intentionally done. This was intentionally done. I don't know how else to, there's no other way to say it. This was intentionally done. Should I say it one more time? This was intentional. All right. You got the idea. All right. I'm going to go back to, hang on just a second here. I want to go back to Conservative Trieste one more time, because the Conservative Trieste earlier today had, given or had stated this. Hang on just a second. My wife's in the studio, so how you doing? You want to come on camera? People want to see you. Come on. She's actually talking with Eric the Tech. All right. Sorry about that, folks. I'm like a kid, you know, when you see the shiny object, I'm easily distracted. All right. This, of course, is day number 12 of the Senate impeachment trial. And the vote tomorrow is going to most likely acquit President Donald John Trump, as well it should. But remember me telling you, coming out here and telling you before, that they cannot afford, that neither side really could afford to have witnesses testify. I told you that right from the beginning. I think I was one of the first people to say that. And, of course, you're hearing this for different reasons. In other words, the absence of witnesses, according to the left, is because, well, the additional witnesses would implicate or, you know, put the cap on, to, you know, to tighten the handcuffs around Donald Trump. And on the right, they said, we don't need any more witnesses. Plus, it's not protocol. So in fact, you just don't have, but the bottom line is that they couldn't afford to have any witnesses, any witnesses specifically about Burisma, and especially Hunter Biden, Joe Biden and such. And Joe Biden's getting a little chaffed at anyone asking questions about Burisma and Hunter Biden. Have you noticed that? Oh, yeah. I think Savannah Guthrie was, when I mentioned her, I think that was in the context of Joe Biden being asked a question about Hunter Biden and Burisma. But there are people out there just really yanking this around, without the understanding of really what's going on. But this particular phase is nothing but political posturing. So from earlier today, and this explains it well. Day 12, Senate impeachment trial, Senate speeches all day, 9:30 a.m. live stream, and went through. So the House managers and President Trump defense team have presented their case. The House managers and President Trump defense team, both sides have presented their case. And the House managers for impeachment and, of course, the Trump defense team in defense of impeachment. Closing arguments are complete. Yesterday and today, the Senate scheduled regular quorum and senator speeches continue. This phase, purely political, partisan politics. Each of the remaining 100 senators is allowed 10 minutes for remarks today prior to the impeachment vote, 4 o'clock tomorrow. So coming on air tomorrow, we'll know what it is, but chances are we're not going to discuss this. At least not. And you got to give things about a good 24 to 48 hours. And I say that because there's a lot of things that kind of seem to filter in during that 24 to 48 hour time period. And this is what I like to do. If there is a big headline, I mean, unless it's breaking, honest to gosh, you know, something that's like a casualty event or something like that, I like to wait a good 24 to 48 hours before discussing it. And there's a reason for that. Because oftentimes, obviously, first reports are wrong, but more importantly, there's a lot of other information, extraneous information that you end up collecting in that period of time within that first 48 hours after an event happens. So once the event takes place tomorrow, the vote takes place tomorrow, I give it a good 24 hours. In this case, it depends on what the event is, but give it 24 hours before you really start talking about it and analyzing, publicly analyzing what happened. gives you the opportunity to privately analyze. But tomorrow at 4 o'clock, the impeachment vote. Now, tomorrow night as well, you can bet there will be gnashing of the teeth on the part of the left. That and what is being said tonight during the State of the Union address. This is going to be a 1-2 combo, I believe. That's just going to blow the lid off things. But most people believe that this garbage is just way too much, that this whole thing is boring, and I agree with that. And it's a dog and pony show. I agree with that as well. But it's one that will, I believe that it really lays out what's going to require us, what we're going to be required to do in the future. So just heads up on that. Tomorrow, 4 o'clock, the vote on impeachment. All right. A couple other things very quickly. Let me just, grab into this here. If you looked at the Super Bowl ads, I just wanted to touch on this. If you watched the Super Bowl for the commercials, you wasted 4 hours of your life. What's the target demographic of the commercials? And was there anything in those commercials that was of any redeeming value? What about the halftime show? What did you think about the halftime show? Eric the Tech, what did you think about the halftime show? Did you watch it? What was it? What was the half you saw? Anything memorable? No. All right. But the reason I brought that up again is because there's a lot of analysis going on with respect to the Super Bowl halftime show. I would be more, and I agree that the Super Bowl halftime show is, it's a ceremony.
It's the biggest stage of the year.
Yeah. And I think messages, and I don't want to get too far into the weeds here, but I believe that it's a ceremony. It's a ceremony that the audience is the elite, and it also serves as a stage to show us, you and I, what's coming in the future, or at least what their intent is. And I'm going to put a period there because I'm going to be addressing some of the, I saw some analysis and plural analyses of the Super Bowl halftime show. And I don't know how many people watched some of the, analysis of the Super Bowl as a ceremony. Some pretty interesting and some pretty creative, assessments there. I'm not sure I agree with all of them, but nonetheless, I thought it was pretty interesting. All right. Before closing this hour out, Greta Thunberg, nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. Did you hear about this, folks? How dare you? Greta Thunberg was nominated for a 2020 Nobel Peace Prize by two Swedish lawmakers. You can't make this up. I'm serious. You can't. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Okay. Adam Schiff, lastly, I don't know how many saw his closing statement or his interview about his closing statements, saying that we proved our case. Going back to the impeachment here again, because I thought this was a very interesting position to take by saying that he expressed no regrets for anything that he did or anything he should have done differently. No, nothing I could have done differently. I have no regrets with respect to the state Senate impeachment trial. He was on Face the Nation, CBS, on Sunday morning. Margaret Brennan, the interviewer, asked Schiff for his response to Lisa Murkowski. She's the Alaskan Republican senator, regarding her vote against calling witnesses to testify, which including calling the articles of impeachment flawed and saying that the partisan nature of the impeachment gets in the way of a fair trial in the Senate. Schiff said that Murkowski and other senators are not mere spectators here. All right. And the reason I bring this up, and I think this is important to understand for me and everyone else, is that when history looks at this, and even near-term history, you're going to see Schiff, Nadler. And I thought it was pretty funny when, I don't know how many people saw this or watched the excerpts from this, in that closing moments of the, over the weekend of the Senate, trial when Adam Schiff was walking up to the podium to deliver the closing remarks. I don't know how many people saw this. Jerry Nadler got up. Actually sprinted. Now, if you can, now imagine this, sprinted ahead of Adam Schiff. Adam Schiff is walking to the podium. And Nadler is sitting in kind of in the back, and they call for the final closing arguments. So Adam Schiff gets up and starts walking to the podium. And Nadler gets up and darts, man, like a garden gnome with a Roman, or a, bottle rocket up its butt. Down the aisle. Did you see that, Eric the Tech? Did you see that? Oh! It was like Oompa Loompa, Oompa running, you know, down the hall. It was the funniest thing ever. So Nadler actually beat Schiff to the podium. And you can watch Schiff just glaring, just, oh. And he let Nadler talk for the time. But man, you could tell Schiff was absolutely PO'd. Man, you should have seen this. I'm going to try to find the video of that. You got to see it. Shame on me for not putting it up. Oh, it was great. And Schiff stared a hole through the eyes, back of the head of Nadler when he was talking. It was great, folks. You're listening to the Hagman Report. Having too much fun today. Hey, pray for Rush Limbaugh. Pray for Rush Limbaugh. Stage 4 cancer. But he can beat it. If anyone can, he can beat it. All right. Hagman Report can be right back next hour. Stan Dale.
Mainstream media won't. You're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Exposing the New World Order, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network. Stand by. Doug and Joe will be back shortly.
Hey, welcome to Hagman. It's the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. You know, last hour I said this, I suggested this, and sure enough, some people on the left are blaming the Russians, even though, you know, they're blaming Russia propaganda accounts for the embarrassing fallout that we saw with the Iowa caucus. And you know who said they would do that? President Trump said that. Now, the results from last night's caucus were delayed due to this reporting issue relating to an app called Shadow. And the owner you saw on last hour, Tara McGowan, is a Mayor Pete Buttigieg supporter and is married. She's even married to one of his advisors now. But a declared victory last night despite internal polling showing that he lost to Bernie Sanders, which prompted the hashtag Mayor Cheat to trend on Twitter. And that in turn prompted numerous hysterical But a supporters to claim the hashtag was a creation of Russian controlled bots. There it is. There's the insanity of the left. Oh man. And by the way, there was that, odd coin flip for delegates. Did you see that? Oh, yeah. Whatever. You know, it's just dubious coin flip hands, but delegates. Okay. Very interesting indeed. There was a caucus voter who wanted to change their vote after finding out that Buttigieg was homosexual. Thought that was rather interesting as well. But the big winner in the larger scheme of things, Donald Trump last night, but take a deep dive into the shady firm Shadow. Understand what we're dealing with here, because I think that will show, how this is all going to kind of play out at the end of the general election. That's my view. All right. If it's Tuesday, then it's Tuesdays with Stan Dale, standale.com. Just a fantastic, I'm telling you, a good guy, fantastic friend of the program. And, he's just just full of knowledge. If you go to standale.com, check out the headlines. Holly does such a great job in just aggregating headlines, things that you need to know. And I believe all important news, and it's broken down into different categories there at standale.com. Also check out the EMP Shield. By the way, you can go to empshield.com/Hagman and or use Hagman for a significant savings there. It's linked off of HagmanReport.com if you don't remember all of that. Or if you go to EMP Shield by way of Sandale, just use Hagman as in the promo or in the at checkout for a significant savings. I'm telling you, you need this. They develop a great product. All right. Stan Dale from standale.com. Stan, how you doing, my friend?
Well, running a bit behind this morning, or this evening. This morning I had a phone call from a retired border agent down on our southern borders here, California. And it was a 2-hour discussion this morning, which ran me a bit behind on doing the side. But wow, the stuff this guy was telling me that goes on behind the scenes. Wow.
Border. Okay. So yeah, if you want to talk about it, if you can, then feel free. If not, no
well,
worries.
Yeah. Just let me say that, he explained to me how the Secret Service was down there working with him as well. All kinds of things are being put into the mix to try to stop the illegal immigration coming across the border in various places. And he was talking to me. He was recovering from being shot several times by one of the illegals while he was trying to apprehend him. And he did manage to cuff the guy and get him down, even though he was wounded severely. But he's wow. on the mend now. Then he's a longtime friend of ours. And so I appreciate his input.
Wow.
The rest of the things were kind of like personal things on stories that happened, you know, while he was serving. He's now retired now because of the wound and everything.
Yeah.
What okay. a great guy. People just don't realize the stuff these guys go through down there with short funds. You know, well, it's increasing now with the Trump administration, but just not having the backing of the government and this crazy split country we've got between the Democrats and the Republicans, it just plays havoc of what really needs to be done to protect the country. I think, as he agrees, I think we've been tipped over the edge now. Then they've just left it too long to fix the border and this situation about illegals, and we're just going to be faced, well, with civil war.
I'm really kind of leaning that way. I think you said it. It's been left too long. It really has. Because I'm not sure. I don't see a good end to this. That's just me. I'm pessimistic.
No, you're not. It's just being, you know, realistic, not pessimistic. The situation now then, you know, with the president, the impeachment, all this, which was all just a sham anyway, it just drives us closer to what I'm thinking George Soros was pushing for, which was the internal, you know, civil war revolution here in this country. And we can't lose this one. We're going to have to fight, physically fight, I think, to stop the communist overthrow of our United States Constitution, our government, and the country. Golly, Moses.
I think so. I guess I'm not really surprised. I'm concerned the fact that we've let this, the educational system the higher education system especially, just indoctrinate our young people to the point of embracement. We should not be embracing communism. To see people actually get excited about these communistic ideals or communism ideals, ideology is just, it makes me ill. It really does. I don't know. We're too far gone, I think.
We are. And, you know, if you say, well, what's the alternative? Some kind of a hybrid mixture between communism, socialism, and capitalism? Not really. The answer is a kingship of the entire planet, where one being, being Jesus, of course, one being makes the decisions. And that means you don't have to go to Congress or to the Senate or anybody else to get permission to do this or that. And if there's a crisis, he has the ability to do immediate action to solve the crisis, to get funds or help, or, you know, however, with technology to solve the crisis. A kingship by a king that is trustworthy, doesn't fail, you know, an immortal creator who created the planet. So we're being driven to this, but people are just slow to realize it. They're still thinking in terms of, okay, we'll have this kind of a human-run system or that kind, you know, where the people have a voice. And let's face it. People in a democracy or in a socialist communist country will vote themselves into power to get as much for themselves personally as they can as far as power and resources. That's just human nature. And with that, no matter what good intentions you started out with, every system we've tried except for the one that we're going to try during the millennium that we will accept, I'm sure, every system has failed other than that one. It might last 200, 250 years for a quote-unquote great nation, and that's, you know, the United States is in that window now to fail. Its time is up. That's another whole discussion. I've been talking with people over the weekend about whether America is a type, like a physical Babylon in this time spoken of in the Revelation of John, and the spiritual one is over in the Vatican. I'm still, you know, divided in my opinions on this, but the description of actual Babylon in the Old Testament so much fits, you know, the modern one, you know, with the rivers all over the place and a powerful nation. And I tried to fit this. I'm getting off topic here, but I tried to fit this in my mind to the situation here with the Vatican and with the United States. Which of these two institutions has a consumerism so great that every country on the earth wants them to buy their products? Well, the United States. It's not the Vatican. Their right. product is a you know, religion type thing. So the United States is the great consumer of the world. And who is like the great police force of the world? Who do they call on, you know, when they have problems in their country? Come help us solve this problem, this revolution, this border dispute or whatever.
The French.
It's the United. Oh, yes. I haven't had enough coffee to make that good yet. But anyway, the Vatican is going to be the spiritual thing which will oversee this global new world order underneath the dictator who will be the Antichrist at this time, coming soon, I think. Now, remember, in Daniel's interpretation of King Nebuchadnezzar's dream, the statue he was interpreting with the various powerful nations in the area there through the ages. And the last one was two iron legs of the statue, and they were the revived Roman Empire. Now, the Roman Empire wasn't just in Rome. It had the western all up through Europe leg and the eastern leg out into the Middle East to the Arab countries in those areas there, including like Turkey, of course. So that revived Roman Empire will somehow in there will be the seat of the Antichrist. Now, it just does not mention the United States by name as a player, a piece in the puzzle at the end toward the Armageddon crisis, the war. So I think, as I said last week, I think America may well be the commercial Babylon in conjunction with England, but mainly the United States, will be the commercial Babylon that's going to be destroyed in 1 hour by fire. And last week, as I said, I think I've come to the conclusion that when the Revelation John talks about the sun increasing its output seven times, that it causes the oceans to burn and the green grass to burn, the trees. Well, that's not killing off Israel and Europe and, the nations involved in the final Armageddon crisis. It's killing off Babylon then. But where is it? The only other area it could be where it's killed one third of the planet suddenly like that is the United States and part of South America and Canada, of course. So anyway, I digress from my normal stuff because this is just bugging the dickens out of me over the weekend. I've been trying to figure out in my own mind, is America the modern physical Babylon, or are we talking about the pile of bricks over in Iraq? I can't see any other country in the world other than us being that policeman and that mighty consumer that it talks about.
I have to give you a lot of credit because after last week's show, I did dig around and I have to agree with you. Sadly, and as much as I don't want to agree with you, I have to agree with you that America sounds like it fits fits pretty well with the description as modern Babylon. But I could be wrong. I don't know. But that's what I came up with.
It's discussion points. You're trying to understand the word as it's revealed to us by current events. So, people shouldn't get excited if we say something that disagrees with their picture at the moment because we are discussing, not pontificating. I don't know all the answers, and this is one I've been chasing the answers to this for some time, many years, but, in our current state here, with a president that is defending the Christians and the Jews and Israel, who's, a strong, bold type president, he has turned America back to, being proud. And I often reflect back on the thing, the statement that pride goes before a fall. Now, we can get too proud and, we can be in trouble and the country can fail. So I'm cautious about not being too proud, but I am really pleased with the president, President Trump and his administration, what they've been able to accomplish in spite of the left-wing communists that are trying to overthrow our government. But just be cautious, folks, we're winning these battles, but be cautious.
That's right. I agree. 10-4. All right.
10-4. Okay. There are a number of things. I was running a wee bit behind this morning because of talking to the agent I was telling you about. But
that's all right. We can ease into things. Let's just ease into things. Take your time. Relax. Let's start the discussion.
I've had time since lunch to figure out these things, but. There are a couple of them that I don't have links on yet down at the bottom of the page, but I can probably add them to tell you what they're about. One of the things that's not, you might not think, why is this important? It's slide 46. It's called an accelerator of human progress. And this is what Mohammed bin Salman is talking about, his new city of Neom. They've upgraded their website and put a lot of things in there as to what they're doing, what different divisions they've got, who they're hiring for various positions, making this like a super scientific engineering think tank that's going to develop stuff for the world, new kind of water purification, new kind of alternate energy but mainly it's still solar than what they're talking about. But the thing that caught my attention was somebody said, have you seen about this city in Saudi Arabia? Well, of course, you and I have been talking about it for a couple of years, but when I went to the site just to check on it, that picture in that the icon there on slide 46 is what greets you. It's that big crystal ball type thing, which we saw in that Da Vinci painting that Mohammed bin Salman allegedly did purchase. And this crystal ball kind of is the theme that he's attached to Neom, trying to see the future, I think, and try to make the future with his developments. And they're showing people, you know, migrating their scientists that they're getting in to set up these think tanks and production areas. So it's just something that I thought was worth commenting on because of this pattern he's got with this crystal ball. Wow. That's a big thing in Saudi Arabia, as President Trump saw when he was over there and put his hand on the planet. They've got like a crystal ball, all lights up and stuff. He's got global plans, and this NEOM kind of just tells you that with all the different projects in it. Let me just see if I can get over there and see what I'm.
And, you know, Stan, one of the things that I know this is kind of a digression too, but one of the things I saw and or realized again is the connection of that city to what is known as the Saudi Vision 2030, which is kind of like a kissing cousin to Agenda 2030, I suppose. It's an Arabic version of Agenda 2030, Agenda 21, 2030. And then, yeah, so it's just, yeah, it's all kind of globalist stuff.
Well, I watch him because at the moment, and that's just at the moment, I don't know what's going to happen in the next few years, but he seems to be, Mohammed bin Salman seems to be building a global package, you know, for technology and for finance. I mean, he owns stock in that blockchain type of business, which is going to be, already is, the method that companies exchange money between each other is a digital currency. So he's got stock in that, and he's building this think tank, you know, to rival what the Israelis do in their own think tanks, like a Technion and stuff, or in Israel. I mean, they've been leading the world in research in medicine and in physics, you know, salt water, you know, reclaiming fresh water from salt water, all kinds of things. I mean, they've just been doing head over heels developments and new technologies to help the planet. So I see that Mohammed bin Salman is trying to compete with them with his own accelerator, you know, cooker, whatever you want, for inventions. Now, enough on him. Over on slide 48, you can click on that and read the article. It says, Pentagon makes quarantine housing announcement as more U.S. virus cases appear. And each of these bases, I think it's each, will house 1,000 sick people who have been infected with the coronavirus. Interesting to me, in that the training institute in Fort Carson, Colorado, you know, the army base next, just across the highway from me here, is where they're going to dump 1,000 of these infected people and treat them. And then Travis Air Force Base in California, Lackland Air Force Base in Texas, and the Marine Corps Air Station at Miramar in California. These are the four areas that are going to be where they set up the victims to, isolate them and to treat them. And there is some hope, you know, that they will find a cure for this. And I don't know whether it's going to be a hot toddy like the guy over in the UK said fixed his coronavirus, but it sounds like a good approach anyway.
I'd do that just for doing it.
Yeah, just general principles, yeah.
Yeah, and in fact, I believe that could be actually prevent, you know, let's all have a hot toddy tonight. And, yeah. But Stan, have you thought any more about the origins of this? Do you think this is a tweaked bioengineered virus, or are you kind of just not really looking in that direction?
No, I'm looking in that direction. You know, it's a bioengineered weapon. When you see patents in the U.S. Patent Office from, you know, last year, this year, concerning ownership of the coronavirus, ownership of a virus,
yep,
that's been created.
Yep.
Now, why do we create these things? Well, in some cases, viruses are being cultured to fight cancer and various other anomalies in the human physiology, you know, for good causes. But like the atomic bomb, you know, or nuclear energy, that was a neat thing to patent, you know, because it made free energy, in essence, from, you know, the nuclear power, or not free, but, you know, a much more concentrated source and huge amounts of energy you can get from it. And now then, of course, we know since, you know, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that it can be used at war.
Right.
So you've got two sides of the coin. So do you tell your scientists, stop looking, stop inventing, stop discovering, because it might be used for war? You can't.
You can't do that. That's right.
It's going to take someone with intelligence and compassion to run this planet and to release what technologies are necessary and harmonic with the whole problem, the whole world, sorry. It is a problem at the moment, but for this to be harmonious to all things considered, all people considered, all countries and life forms, you have to have a person in charge, a being in charge, that knows the formula for the planet, that helped build the planet. And that's Jesus. I mean, there's, you know.
You got that right. Because to me, I don't think anyone's up to the job right now. I don't think there's anyone capable of governing planetary governance. I guess that's the way to say it. Except our Lord and Savior. So that's just my story. I'm sticking to it.
Well, me too. And if we believe the Bible, which I do, and it's a historical and a factual document, we're told about these things and why humans running, the planet are not going to work. It takes the creator of the planet who has the blueprint for how everything should work in harmony. And I'm talking, even flows of rivers and animal life and trees, all these things have to work in harmony with each other. And the only one that really knows that is the creator of these things. You know, it's the architect. As the Masons say, he's the great architect.
Oh, you quoted the Masons.
Oh, dear. Sorry. Yes.
Watch out now. I'm going to get a whole bunch of comments now. All right. But no, you're right. You're exactly correct. Especially when you see where, at least in my view, where mankind is, I don't have faith in mankind, I guess. In the goodness of mankind, I should say.
Hey, on slide 51, I think it is, the Taal volcano we were talking about in the last few weeks came and went and settled down, and everybody's starting to move back into the Philippines in the areas where they had to evacuate because they might be like part of a new Pompeian-type explosion and be buried in ash. Well, 5 hours ago, I think, now then, I'm just doing a quick math, earlier today, anyway, we'll say, they have now put out an alert that it looks like it's going to blow again. Now, the Philippines, they're saying the volcano is now looking like it's going to go again, and you got people traipsing them back home thinking that it's all over. This is only one of many things that are happening with earthquakes and volcanoes around the planet that indicate an increase. It is an increase in these kind of phenomenon. And they all, to me, kind of underscore what I've been talking about as far as the crust of the planet separating. It's being expanded and pulling apart, which is allowing these magma intrusions to come up through, plate tectonic borders and earthquake fault lines in the United States and elsewhere. It's all happening. I mean, I know it's an old hippie phrase. It's all happening, man. But it is. I guess that tells my age.
You do it, but no, that's all right. Me too. But I gotta tell you, your explanation, when I first heard it, I don't know how many years ago, about the expansion of the earth, and how the cracks would form and how, man, it just makes so much sense. And even as it relates to, time, as it relates to, just about everything you can think of, this makes sense to me. It's something I can wrap my brain around and understand. And you're right. So, come on back. Oops. Well, maybe not so fast. Watch out. Look at the pretty colors. Okay. Yeah.
I know that governments, Philippines is no exception, do try to sugarcoat, a pill that's bad. Like you've got a danger. You've mitigated the danger, you think, but you're not going to tell them that if there's, other things about to happen because you're not sure. And we've discussed that, how the USGS itself, when it was over trying to pick the eruption point of Pinatubo, the scientists, they showed a documentary. They weren't sure themselves whether to tell people, a million people in the blast area, whether, look, it may blow now. It looks like it's going to blow, and so get out of town. They had to soft pedal it because if they were wrong, they would be so discredited that nobody would believe it when they announced the real, like the kid crying wolf or something. So I understand the Philippine, Geological Society doing the same thing. And then here they couldn't put it off any longer because the eruptions are starting to rumble. The earthquakes underneath the cone are starting to rumble. Yep. And The Tau volcano is just one of several, like down in North Island, New Zealand, in the Taupo caldera, where they're sitting on a fault line that is spreading and sliding apart, and it's going to reach a critical point at some time really soon where it's just going to erupt from the magma pressure coming up through these fault lines and these cracks in the Earth's surface. Anyway, that's an old drum I'm beating, but
it might be old, but it's certainly relevant, so not a problem. Okay.
I got an email from one of your listeners here about, you know, the difference between, you know, Richter 1, Richter 2, you know, earthquakes. And, okay, it's 10 times the strength of the one, you know, below it. A Richter 3 is 10 times greater than a Richter 2. Well, that's in magnitude. But there's magnitude, you know, the shocking, you know, magnitude, you know, left, right on the surface. Then there's the amount of energy released, whether it shook or not. Right. The shaking intensity, the modified Mercalli intensity scale, all these things, which kind of crosses your eyes. But I've put a link up to the USGS. So they have a site of info, which I found very interesting. I play in this area all the time, but I found reading this, explained a lot of things to me I hadn't thought about as far as earthquake detection, measuring where it came from, how strong it was, how deep it was, all this kind of stuff. And I did some experiments on that graph or that picture I show in the icon part of the page there. It shows an earthquake in some part of San Francisco there with the rings going out from it. And part of what you'll read in the articles there on the USGS site shows how they have different seismometers all over the planet. And so when an earthquake occurs, the one that first reports the shaking is closest to the site. So they take that as a big circle they draw because they don't know exactly where it is, but it happened within, say, 3 milliseconds of when they detected it. So, or when it happened. And then they take seismometers that are further away and they draw circles of intensity around that. And they do what they call a solution of seven, you know, linear equations to find out the location of the earthquake, which is not one spot, but an evolving tear in the surface of the Earth. You know, I always thought, well, okay, the earthquake dot is there. That's where the earthquake center was, the epicenter. But it's not a single little spot there. It spreads along as the fissure opens up. And so you've got the earthquake zone, if you wish, down where it's occurring and unwrapping. So anyway, I played with that over the weekend with the concentric circles and the overlapping circles that you use for, you know, in algebra to find out the common center. And it works, but their equations are much more accurate. So, and then you've got to have different soil types, you know, water versus, you know, granite and things and how they transmit the shockwave at what speed. And they've got all these factors they have to put in to solve the location and depth, intensity, you know, magnitude of a single earthquake. And that's why they say on their site, such and such earthquakes have not been reviewed by a human yet. Well, that's because there are a lot of factors you got to take into consideration, and it really takes a human mind that studies and knows all these factors and can put them together and solve that that equation. But anyway, if you do go to that site, the link there on the USGS, and scroll down, you will. Let me just get there, and I'll tell you what you'll see. You'll see articles on the same site: seismometers, seismograms. What's the difference? How do they work? How can I make my own seismometer? What was the duration of the earthquake? Why don't you report the duration of each earthquake? How does the duration affect the magnitude? You know, how can an earthquake have a negative magnitude? You know, instead of Richter 1 or 0, it's minus 1. They have a logical explanation. It's not a big deal. But, you know, these are things that people see occasionally. They say, a minus 1 earthquake? What happened? Did it just become a black hole and suck everything out? You know, good questions. And, you know, the negative depth, how can it be up above the air, you know, the surface in the air somewhere, when it's occurring down in the seabed or on the land somewhere? And, but all these articles down there are just well worth reading and studying because it'll open your mind to the difficulties they have in producing the information that we do get from them on the USGS site. My hat's off to them.
Wow.
A lot of work involved in that, much more than I thought.
Well, you know, thinking about it, when you mentioned earlier in the conversation about, you know, the earthquake location being a dot, and as opposed to a dot, it's more of a tear or a line. I mean, if you take a piece of paper and just rip the paper, from one end to the other, that's no longer a dot. That's an area, and that would reflect, at least in my mind, I can picture that. So if that was the Earth, yeah, okay, I get that. And then all of the other things that you mentioned, my goodness. Boy, there's a lot to that.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, just you read those articles and you'll see I really have a greater appreciation for the work those guys do.
Yeah.
And what slide is that? Let's talk about slide 49, global earthquakes in the last 7 days. You can zoom that thing up and move it around if you want.
Okay.
What we see there is normal activity, you know, over east of Australia in New Zealand, north of New Zealand, and along the fault lines up through New Guinea. Normal kind of earthquake activity. But what I'm looking at this week is in the Caribbean. If you just click on where Florida is, it'll zoom it up.
Yep.
There's something wrong there. First, we had Costa Rica, you know, a few thousand earthquakes there in a place that doesn't normally get them. And so I thought, well, what's causing that? That's weird. And then this week we've had, you know, a bunch, hundreds, and some reasonably large, over in the what do we call that there? That's the bay of the Cayman Trench, the Cayman Islands Trench. If you go to slide 50, and that's a close-up of this activity I was talking about. It's a big picture. And you'll see in the Cayman Islands where these earthquakes are all along a very sharp cliff or cleft, you know, like a rip, if you wish, in the Earth's surface. And it's along the plate tectonic border, and you can see the red line, which is telling you where the fault lines are known to be in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's opening up. But if you then look at to the east of that, over into the Dominican Republic and into Puerto Rico in between them, there's an extension of that fault line that runs over the Dominican Republic, over Haiti, and over Puerto Rico. But this is showing then that whole weakness in the surface of the Earth, that, you know, that fault line, which is obviously deep, it's becoming more active and spreading out. Why? You see, this is part of this whole global expansion thing I'm talking about, that the weak points are splitting apart. It's a whole other discussion about how these formed and how over Costa Rica, there to the right side of it, it forms a shape that looks like the head of a submerged asteroid that hit a long time ago and scooted everything that way during the great asteroid impact that caused the flood over, you know, from over in the Indian Sea, but Indian Ocean. Anyway, things are happening. Keep an eye on these areas. If more earthquakes occur along that fault line that we see there, then we can be reasonably certain that this is where stress is being relieved. Right? It's pulling apart there, weakness in the crust.
All right. It seems like as well we're having more within the continental United States. It just seems comparative. Maybe it's just my skewed vantage point, but it just seems like even things are heating up here in the continental United States. But you know, one thing I noticed too, it doesn't seem like hardly ever, nothing ever happens in Great Britain. I mean, I don't know why, but rarely do I ever see any dots over the UK over there. I'm just saying, maybe it's,
I don't know. I had never thought about it, but I guess you're right.
Seems awful quiet up there.
Well, if you look in the seabed, you look for great, you know, splits in the ocean floor, you know, these troughs and trenches. And that tells you where you're going to see pressure release. So maybe Great Britain was fortunate in that respect. It's not, mind you, it did separate from Europe. You can see the White Cliffs of Dover. You know, there's a separation there somewhere. So maybe offshore between UK and the mainland, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, perhaps. Just one of those things you think about in the when you don't have any more or when you got nothing better to do. Okay.
Yeah. All the time. Just bored to tears. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so much happening in politics and world economy and geophysics at the moment. It's amazing the amount of stories that we have to go through here and sort out the best ones to tell, you know, the central point of what's happening.
Sure.
You know, I was looking, we had snowfall last night, which is becoming rare at the moment here where we are in Colorado for some reason. But as I was watching the snowflakes fall down and cover everything in white, make it all look clean and pristine, I kind of had a funny thought. I said, you know, wouldn't it be neat if the Holy Spirit descended on the whole earth like that, like gentle snowflakes, and cleaned everything and made it all white and pure again? Just a crazy observation, but anyway.
That is a nice thought. Yeah, it would be nice. I happened to be thinking about that this morning. I was running errands pretty early, and you know, as day turns into, or as night turns into the day, you have the different shades of gray and darkness, and then as it became lighter, I just noticed, you know, minus the snow, everything is just looks so brown and dirty and gray and ugh. I don't know. It's just.
You know how New York is. You're talking about grungy and whatever. I remember arriving in New York on a trip over the Middle East. It was just a layover, but I looked at around us, all the dirt in the street and things, but it had all been covered the night before by snow. And I thought, how pretty this is, you know, the lights on the snow and all the filth and stuff have been covered up by this nice white blanket, and it made New York palatable, you know. I'll probably get cards and letters from that, but anyway, you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
So yeah. Clean.
Yeah, you know, it, and maybe that contributes to the magic of Christmas time, you know, with the snow and, I get what you're talking about. And, I don't know. It just, it takes some of the ugliness away.
As adjust your teeth there. You know,
I guess, so something falling out. You're spitting bubbles or whatever you call it. Here, find your friend. Okay. I don't know.
Slide 52. Now, it shows a picture of Soleimani, but that's what the article put up there. Talking about the White House, you know, Trump is threatening to veto a pair of bills the House plans to vote on this week aimed at restricting Trump's ability to wage war on Iran. Now, the way these sneaky devils do this is they attach this to other things, other bills, so that it's a rider on it, if you wish. And it's a bill that the administration want to pass. But then again, with this rider on it, they don't want to pass that. And so it's a way that it causes a blocking of the legislation to be passed one way or the other. If they restrict the president to act within his legal constitutional rights to protect the United States, they have to be considered enemies of the state. They really do.
You would think.
And all through this whole impeachment stuff, I wondered, how can they get away with the stuff they're saying and doing and lies they're telling? You know, it's like King's X, you can't hurt us. We can say anything we want, you know, and lie, cheat, and steal, and just not honorable at all.
No. And you know, I keep hearing the phrase or the statement, future presidents are gonna pay for this, or gonna be held to, you know, they're gonna experience this. That's nice. But, what we're seeing right now is just horrific. And you're right. Is there anything Donald Trump should be doing that he's not doing? To me, it just seems like if I was in that position, I'd be like really frustrated. I'd be wanting to kick some, you know, open a can of whoop, you know. I would be so, because this is not right. I don't care how you look at it, it's not right. But I don't know. Yeah, it's separation of powers. I get all that, but this is just, you can't, frustrated.
Well, it is. And we're coming to a head. I can't say it enough. We've totally divided the country, and it's because of a communist, threat to us, which has been insidious, because when I was like 16, I think it was, and my dad and his brothers formed Timely Publications down in Dallas. Mm-hmm. They were helping the John Birch Society and other conservative groups to wake up America to the communist infiltration of our schools and our seminaries and that kind of stuff, with a long-term plan, several generations, to overthrow the capitalistic U.S. government.
Yeah.
And here we are. You know, this is like 50, almost 60 years after they started that, it is now starting to happen. And this was forethought, you know, foresight on my parents and my uncles and their wives and stuff. On their part, we worked with H.O. Hunt, with the Hunt Oil and stuff. He funded a lot of stuff to try to wake up America. And people after World War II were were just tired of thinking about any other kind of war or civil war or invasion or anything. They just wanted to relax and, you know, throw the ball out in the park on Sunday and, you know, have children, go to movies, that kind of stuff. They didn't want to hear about being invaded right then. You know, General Patton, you know, he knew that the Russians were going to come after us. They weren't going to stop. And he wanted to turn around after World War II had ended with Germany and just turn right around and invade Russia and stop all this nonsense. And, of course, the administration at that time said, no, we won't do it. Anyhow, it's just kind of, to me, it's like, oh, yeah, we talked about this 60 years ago. Yeah, it's finally happening. to a lot of people, it's probably eye-opening, but to me, it's like, been a while coming, but here it is. Yeah, understand. Illuminati, world government, yeah.
Yeah,
it's all there.
I woke up very late in life, I suppose, and even, I mean, I always understood the cloud of the communist threat, or at least I recognized that potential, but I never understood that it was already here, and it was that post-World War II era, like you were talking about, you know, with the John Birch Society, and the hunt, you know, paying for the education of this threat. Stan, I got to tell you, I think back around 2001, and especially when seeing the kind of behind the scenes of the carnage in New York, if I would have told the individual who took me back behind the scenes here that we'd have Muslims in Congress, I mean, overt, you know, Rashida Tlaib, and others, in a potential Islamic, CIA director in Brennan. You know, I'd probably have been kicked out of there as a kook.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. It's a red green axis or a red green thread going through our country that's taken away from us.
Well, you know, I'm at the point now where I hope we make it all the way to the election in November without massive civil disorder here in this country.
Yeah.
It's only going to take a small spark to set it off.
It's true. There's
too many people at odds with each other. Hey, listen, speaking of sparks, did you watch the game, the Super Bowl?
I did not. I caught maybe a couple of plays, if that counts.
Well, we watched the whole thing, and we were supporting the Chiefs, so it came out well for us. But one of the things I – reason I was talking about the Hunt family is I realized that the Chiefs were owned by – Lamar Hunt's wife. And of course that was part of the Lamar was who my dad dealt with as well. And seeing them get a win, you know, on this was kind of really satisfaction to me because they put so much into other things to try to wake up America. But for them to win this, you know, take the underdogs and win was really a great deal for the family.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of neat. Go ahead.
I remember, you know, dad was over at H.L. Hunt, you know, Lamar's dad over at his place there in Dallas one night. And he said, you know, that guy's got millions and millions of dollars, and he has a payphone in his hallway.
What? Okay.
The carpets were threadbare, and he would take his lunch to work in a paper sack. Strange fellow, but really quite, you know, alert to what was happening in the country. Interesting man.
Eccentric, I suppose. Yeah. Frugal.
Yeah.
But you know, I get that too. If I had seriously, if I had $1 million, I would. Do everything I could possibly do to save that $1 million. I don't know. You know, I would be, I don't know.
Well, Howard or H.L. Hunt was, you know, he was from a poor environment as a kid, and he worked his way by, you know, hard work and ingenuity to get to where he was. And he's one of those kind of millionaires that you say, well, you know, I don't mind him having the wealth because he earned it and he's helped the community by doing what he did.
Sure.
So anyway, it's kind of a period of my life that was quite interesting where, you know, we hired there, rented the Dallas Memorial Auditorium there and held rallies to stop training Yugoslav communist pilots there in Texas at Perrin Air Force Base. And we had people come to speak to us like, what was his name? Goldwater, Barry Goldwater. And I was backstage with these guys with General Walker In fact, they tried to kill General Walker during that time we were holding these meetings. Put a shot through his living room window there in Dallas, and
that was attributed to Oswald, wasn't it, or one of?
Oh yeah, they did. Whether he did or not, I don't know. But I found General Walker to be an amazing, you know, representative of the military mind and of our conservative position. Mr. Sidney Latham was H.O. Hunt's attorney, and he would he chaired the meetings in the auditorium there. First one we had, which was announced in the newspaper, we had people that filled up the floor part of the auditorium, you know, the central floor underneath the stage. Right. And then we had a few of us out on the seats around the edge. And I remember Dad was there with some, you know, he had a bunch of money, like $1 bills that he had when he was getting the paycheck cash for his staff there at the research lab. Anyway, he was there at that meeting, and when Sidney Latham was talking, he was making these points, and Sidney was trying to raise interest to get donations to help fight, you know, get this to Congress and stop the training of the Yugoslav pilots. Well, Sidney went to a certain part in the lecture where he was just, everybody was emotionally on a high, and he says, and we need your support, your help to do this. And with that, my dad jumped up, reached in his pocket, got a handful of $1 bills, all brand new, you know, like they'd fly, threw them over the railing into the floor below. As they settled to the floor, the balcony, the railings filled with people doing the same thing. And in the chairs, they were all just throwing money at the floor. They had to sweep it up in bushel baskets. And it's a spark like that that initiated the whole movement of the National Indignation Committee is what it was called in those days. So I lived in some interesting times with interesting people.
About how old were you? Because that had to be back, what, in the early 60s?
Yeah, I was, let's see. 60s? 16, 15, 15, okay. 16, something like that. Right. Yeah.
Because I think Mr. Hunt passed away in the mid-70s, maybe?
I guess. I don't remember, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So. Wow, that had to be something for you to see all of that, huh?
It was. And now we see, about 60-some-odd years later, or 58 years later, that finally the people are waking up when it's too late, but at least we tried, and the message did get out for a long time.
Right. Well, God bless that man, and God bless you for doing all of that, and, you know, and your dad, and... it's just, wow.
They're the unsung heroes of all this. They really are.
Yeah.
And they weren't like, you know, grabbing money or stuff like that, you know, for personal gain. It was, everybody was contributing more than they could afford in time and money to try to help America wake up that we were being subverted at that time by fifth columnists.
Well, you know, Stan, I look at it this way. I see that's what you're trying to do, and I'd like to think people look at me in that same fashion, that I'm trying to do that as well, and maybe I can't do it as well as other people, but I can bring people to this up, you know, platform to do it. You know, you're that modern day, I don't know, bellwether. You're that modern day Hunt, H.L. Hunt. Well,
I wish.
Yeah, wait a minute. Maybe not. You're that modern day person who says, hey, you know, these
canary.
Are the troubles. Yeah.
The canary.
Yeah.
Yeah. And look, people listening to the show here, they think, oh, wow, you guys are doing all this kind of stuff. But every person that is aware of the situation and shares it with another person is joining the fight. It's really important, you know, on a face-to-face, you know, person-to-person basis, they know you. And when you alert them to these dangers, you're helping in this fight.
Yep.
And it's a fight for survival.
Man, it is. And the more I look at things, the deeper I look at things, because we, you know, there's open source information, and there's information that we acquire on our own, and then there's different levels of the information. Man, the more I learn about things, the more I realize, number one, I know less than I thought I knew, and number two, it's more complex at times than I know about. And but most importantly, it's I believe it's a matter of our survival, and that's one thing that I don't take lightly, the survival of this country, especially in our way of life. because I don't see this going well.
I mean, it's getting to the point where being a patriot is a crime.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah. You're right.
Well, the stage we're going through now is not going to be without pain and suffering and death. I mean, when George Washington and the rest of the Continental troops, when they fought to break free of what was like a tyrannical reign, from England, people died. People lost their farms and stuff. They stood to the forefront and alerted people and defended the country as best they could, and they did a good job of it by the grace of God. And it's not something that makes you rich. You might get a mention in a history book, but it costs lives and fortunes. And
do you think, and I know we're just, kind of just talking here, and do you think that today's men, are we going to have the guts, are we going to have the will to fight for this country, or are we going to wimp out? I mean, I
think the majority of our men in this country are, the younger ones particularly are going to be doubtful, probably wimpy as far as being shot at or defending us. And I know all the military guys and ex-military would stand up and defend us. But I guess we could attribute it to too much conditioning in the TV and too much fried chicken with all the hormones in it,
That's true.
Yeah, I reassess. Sorry, go on.
No, I look at Virginia, and despite the fact I was encouraged by the number of people who turned out in Virginia, 2 weeks ago, whenever that was.
Yeah.
But now what? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I noticed that they were all strapped, carrying weapons and stuff, but legally, and nobody got shot, and no fights incurred, and it was a demonstration much unlike what the left would do when they demonstrate, their left socialist positions. But I was proud that these guys put a strong foot forward, but did it legally, and ethically correct anyway.
Yeah, but Stan, the bottom line is nine gun bills are now, just ready to pass in Virginia. And so let's just say they pass. What the tens of thousands of people were protesting against and saying, we're not going to take it. So they pass. Now, what do we do in that particular case? I'm serious about this. Do we go into the state house and armed and I mean this sincerely and say, y'all made a bad mistake by passing these laws and, we have to, they're unconstitutional and now we got to do something. Now we're here because I think back to the Battle of Athens in, 46 and in McMinn County, Tennessee, where veterans came back and, found corruption and they took care of it and they went to the armory, got the guns and gathered together and kicked some booty, So I'm not sure. I know this is not 1946. Yeah, but just saying, I don't know.
Well, the guys came back from the war, and they certainly have been trained in what's right, and what's wrong, and how to correct it, against a mortal enemy. And we're facing mortal enemies here now. So the question just still remains, now, what are they going to do there? Are they, when they knock on your door and say, we want your weapons, are they going to shoot the people trying to collect the weapons who are performing a legal duty they have to the state? I've argued with myself over this, what happens if, members of the police force come here and say, we're coming to get your guns. And I might know some of the guys, and so do I just shoot them or what, what do you do?
Yeah. That would be very tough. And I've wrestled with that myself. I had a discussion with a police officer and, he wouldn't be the one coming to my house, but I said, look, I'm afraid that I have to shoot. I'd have to shoot. You want my guns? You're coming in here. I probably would have to shoot you. And I was dead serious. I'm dead serious now. If somebody came in to take my guns against the Constitution, when I've done nothing wrong, when I'm, based on some obscure or some gun grabbing legislation. Yeah. Stan, I thought about this, but I'll tell you what, I'd probably have to stand my ground. And
yeah,
I wouldn't like it. I would not like. Man, don't please don't make me do it. But
I know. I know. Well, how does state law overturn constitutional law? I just don't understand how they can do that anyway.
Doesn't. Can't. It can't. Now, state law can overturn, in some cases, county and, municipal law. That's the Dillon's rules principle. And then there's the opposite of that, but there's nothing, any law that's antithetical to the Constitution of the United States is no law at all. It's null and void. And that's Marbury versus Madison. That's a precedent. But yet, who cares about laws anymore? It seems like,
Well, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Boy, were doing so well, weren't we? We were kind of talking about snowflakes and puppy dogs and rainbows. Now we're talking about shooting people coming into the house.
Not quite so serious, but yes, I guess it is. It's slide 53 about Jared Kushner. He's been orchestrating this peace treaty in the Middle East for several years. And the Palestinian leader, Mahmoud Abbas, said Saturday that they weren't going to accept the peace plan. They're going to reject it because it's spearheaded by the son-in-law of the president, Jared Kushner. And Abbas calls him that boy, to make him diminish, make him smaller anyway.
Yep.
And I had to laugh about that because, Jared Kushner's demeanor is always kind of, nose in the air, kind of I'm the greatest type thing in negotiating. And even though the deal will probably go ahead with the Palestinians, behind the scenes, they're actually making overtures to the White House about, okay, so what we want this, though. We don't want to go with what you originally said we'd have to agree with. But it was kind of funny to see Kushner be slapped down a bit verbally anyway by this guy. The young pup, the boy.
Yeah.
And so I found it amusing. So anyway.
I like that reference. Yeah. The boy.
If you look at the picture that I've got there, it was perfectly done because it's like he's been told that to his face and he kind of goes, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a perfect selection of a picture. My goodness.
Yeah. Tensions are still rising over there. I mean, in slide 45, I showed how they had an explosion in the gas pipeline between Egypt and Israel, which was part of the old peace treaty that they had. And so somebody is, interrupting the power supplies to Israel. And it made me think, wow, if one guy can come up there and put a bomb on the pipeline and blow it up, that interrupts the supply of gas to Israel for some time. And if they do that in other places that have gas pipelines, like, into Jordan from Israel and things like this, well, these become very vulnerable targets, which can create havoc of unknown proportions in these countries that depend on the oil supplies and gas.
I never realized it was that exposed and that vulnerable from what I'm looking at in that image.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's...
There must be somebody looking at it, overseeing it, or guarding it somewhere, but they still managed to miss the guys that came up and blew it apart.
Yeah. That doesn't give me more fuzzy. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Quickly here, slide 43, in a place called Tau, T-A-U, it's a dig. It was outside Jerusalem, and they found a temple. That's like King Solomon's temple, but they say it wasn't. It's just big enough that it could have been. And it's an interesting story to read because Israelis have been trying, ever since they got the country back together again, to figure out where King Solomon's temple was, where his castle was, or his digs where he lived, because they wanted to prove that King Solomon existed and that King David existed. And they've been trying with all kinds of archaeological digs and research to find, either remains or ruins of Solomon and David that they can prove that they existed. And it's been an exceptional thing to realize is that they don't have, physical proof of King David or of King Solomon. Yet there was so much of history written about him, even in the Arab countries. It's like somebody just wiped the evidence of him even existing away somehow. It's just another one kind of getting close in the archaeological digs to maybe finding out where the remains of their castles, their kingdom are.
Interesting to think about. Very good pictures at that link, by the way. Very interesting pictures. Stan, you did it again. You took us to another full hour right here on a Tuesday night. I want to thank you so very much. And God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you. God bless you.
All right. Folks, we're out of time. Until tomorrow, may God bless each and every one of you. Don't forget, Patreon meeting next Sunday night, 7 o'clock. Steve Quayle coming up this Thursday night, by the way. May God bless. Good night.